FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is 10-8-18, which numerologically speaking is an interesting number. Not as interesting as 8-8-18 or 8-18-18, but nonetheless, hey, we are back. We're doing this on video. The YouTube will be up shortly. YouTube, if you're watching, listening on YouTube, it's going to be audio separate from video, but the video will definitely be up there. We're here with our good friend John Rubino, and hey, John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry, happy Monday. What does that mean? The audio is going to be separate from the video.
There will be two separate posts. One will just have audio on YouTube. The other will have audio and video. So you can take your pick. And right. if you're visually inclined, then, hey, you want to watch the video. So, hey, and as always, be a part of the show. We're going to go over a couple of questions if we got time, but one certainly. And don't forget, email us, be a part of the show, kl@kerrylutz.com. So, John, I just finally finished up with my daughter's wedding over the weekend. It was an amazing experience. And, you know, it's really a welcome break because we look at everything. We're watching the economy, the political scene, the geopolitical scene, everything going on, so-called trade wars, you name it. And then you have like a major family event, and it really shows you what is important, what really makes a difference. And then you come back and you go back to your work, and it's like you have a somewhat different perspective on things. And hey, don't forget, go visit John's site over at dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for both our newsletters. So, John, we got a question from Eric of Australia, the land down under. He's on the Gold Coast. My daughter just happens to be going on her honeymoon in the land down under, to Fiji and New Zealand and all those great places. So anyway, Eric writes, hi, Kerry. Love your work. We all want to survive financially. Back in 08, I called it wrong and focused on getting debt-free. Good thing, but we now know it would have been better to double down, at least for an easy ride on asset accumulation. Yes, obviously, if you could tell the future, you'd get tomorrow's newspaper and, you know, you'd put everything in options that you knew were going to go up. But back then, the belief was it's all unsustainable. It's got to crash. Question, what exactly would make it crash? Who would pull that lever? What government department or financial institution? Or is it the confidence of the people? That's interesting. The way I see it now, they can crash it all, lose fortunes, maybe start a war, lose their privileged positions, or press zero on the keyboard and add tenfold to the money supply. The latter is a given. So we agree they'll just keep printing. What mechanism / event would stop that from happening? I still think it's unsustainable, yet they keep printing. So I think that's a great question, Eric, and we're really thrilled to have John on here to address it.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah. Well, towards the end of bubbles, an idea takes hold that it can go on forever because the people in charge have figured everything out. They know how to keep it going, and it's in their interest to keep it going. Therefore, the future will be just like the last few years. You know, everything will keep going up, and it will never stop. But something always happens to stop it.
Yes.
And the reason for that is because imbalances build up when people stop worrying about risk. They start paying whatever price they have to get into the hot assets. And you get massive misallocations of capital that eventually blow up on you, no matter what the government is doing. But usually the government participates in this because they see the imbalances building up. And especially at the Fed, they're worried about inflation running out of control. So they start raising interest rates. You see interest rates go up traditionally before every big market bust. And we're seeing the same thing happen now. As for why they have to do this and why can't they just keep easing forever, the imbalances, when they start building up, have to be rectified somehow, because otherwise, as I said, the misallocation of capital becomes completely unsustainable. And what we've done this time is we put all the pressure on currencies. In other words, they can keep doing this as long as the rest of the world accepts the dollar and the euro and the yen, et cetera, as things that have value. But as we create more and more of them, the proposition, the belief that that they will continue to hold their value becomes more and more unrealistic. And eventually, everybody starts to bail out of these currencies by buying real stuff with those currencies. In other words, if you buy farmland with dollars, in effect, you're shorting the dollar. In effect, you're dumping the dollar. You're saying, I don't think the dollar is as valuable as this real asset. Therefore, I'm going to take my dollars and convert them into real assets. So you see asset price inflation, and then that bleeds over into wage inflation, and then things do start to spin out of control, and that ends the cycle. And that's what we're looking at right now. We're seeing booms in trophy real estate and blue chip stocks and fine art, and you know, go down the list of things that we can't make more of. Therefore, they become more valuable when currencies become less valuable. They're all going up, and now companies can't find anybody else to hire, apparently. That's the anecdotal story that we're hearing out there. So they're raising wages. We just saw Amazon raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour. So we're getting wage inflation along with asset inflation. That is spooking the financial markets. That's causing interest rates to go up. You know, the yield on the 10-year treasury was like 1.8% a year ago. Now it's, what is it now, 2.3% or 2.25%? That is a huge deal that we should spend some time talking about today, Kerry, because rising interest rates in this world is a mortal threat to a lot of different business and government models, because everybody's borrowing short out there to take advantage of zero or even negative interest rates, which means huge amounts of debt are building up that have to be rolled over frequently. And if rates go up, that debt has to be rolled over at higher rates, which causes interest expense to explode for a lot of these guys. And that's what we're seeing right now. And that's very possibly the thing that ends the cycle. For instance, the U.S. government, if our average interest rate just went back to what it was normally before the 2000s, you know, before we started these monetary experiments, which is to say like 5 or 6% across the board, we would have to pay $1 trillion a year just in interest at the federal level, and quite a bit more than that at the corporate level and personal level. You know, everybody's interest rates would go up, and that would blow holes in everybody's budget. So that's the kind of thing that could stop this cycle in its tracks. And you're seeing the fear of that start to bubble up in the stock market. We've had three straight days of over 100-point loss on the Dow Jones Industrials, and bigger losses than that in percentage terms on the NASDAQ. In other words, tech stocks are falling faster than anything else. So it's completely possible that as we're talking about, you know, why can't this cycle continue forever, it's already ending. That's not guaranteed, but when it ends, it's going to feel like this. You know, it's going to start this way with rising interest rates and plunging stocks and turmoil in the bond market and a rising dollar because higher interest rates push up the dollar and that blows up the emerging markets. You know, all of that stuff is happening out there right now, and it could easily metastasize from here and create a generalized downturn. You know, it's overdue, so something's going to happen to cause it. And we may be seeing it now.
And we can never forget that every boom ends with a bust, right?
Well, the question is, why does that have to be true? Why can't they just keep inflating these bubbles forever?
Yeah. And why can't they? Why can't they do it? Because the powers that be, John, would have you believe that they can keep doing this forever and ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the story that they're telling, that don't worry, we got this. You know, the Fed has your back if you're a big bank. The government has your back if you're a stockholder or a corporation buying back its equities with borrowed money. Okay. They're telling us that. But they can't deliver on that promise. You know, that's the government writing checks that its monetary and fiscal authorities can't cash. Yeah. Because the imbalances are becoming so outrageous that eventually they just blow up. And there's nothing you can do about that if your currency is one of the imbalances that is going to blow up. And that's really the case with today's fiat currencies.
Totally true. And yeah, it's not magic. It's not... we're going to have to post this video another time because it's not quite working right. I've got this Mevo camera. I know what I'm doing on it, but it doesn't know what I'm doing. But in any event, we've got the video. If I can hook up a separate audio with the separate video, we might be able to do it. But in any event, so really, we're hitting the end game here where the financial engineering, the financial machinations just can't go on anymore, right?
Yeah. I don't want to say for certain that this is the turn. This is the end of the cycle.
Yeah.
But eventually the cycle has to end. And when it does, it's going to, you know, feel like the last few days where stocks tank and bonds tank and everybody's terrified and nobody seems to understand why. You know, it's going to be like that. And that's coming. Remember, we've had a bunch of cycles that seemed like they would never end. Right. The tech stock cycle, a personal aside, I was a tech stock columnist in the late 1990s for thestreet.com, which at that time was a hot financial website. And I was the resident bear. And so every time I posted something that was negative about tech stocks, I would get deluged with people telling me why it was going to go on forever. And, you know, the future was going to be much better than the past because, and they would lay out all these reasonable sounding reasons for things to continue. And the biggest one was that the government had the business cycle licked.
Yeah.
And we were going to grow forever at a steady pace. And same thing with the housing bubble. Home prices always go up because they always go up. You know, that's the circular logic that takes hold in a bubble. And now we've got the same thing going where it seems like it could go on forever because it seems like they got it licked. You know, there's no more business cycle. The central banks will just create as much liquidity as necessary and that liquidity will flow into positive things. And no, it won't. This cycle will end. We don't know when for certain, but this is already the longest economic expansion in U.S. history. So I think the end is much closer than the beginning for this. And if we're not in the eighth or ninth inning, I'll be really shocked.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, they've tried to do it many times before in many civilizations, trying to basically, financial alchemy, trying to keep things going because the alternative of things not going is really horrible, isn't it?
Well, you made an important point there, Kerry, that this isn't unique. You know, the world has done this a bunch of times. Countries going back before the Roman Empire, really, but, in Western memory, beginning with the Roman Empire, have decided to finance excessive spending by debasing their currency. You know, in the days of Rome, they took something that a coin called the denarii that used to be silver, and they started adding copper to it until it was completely copper and virtually worthless. And so they had a hyperinflation in which the price of everything went up, and the gold coins that still remained became incredibly valuable. They were the property of the rich. So people with farmland, like rich people owned, and gold coins made out during the Roman hyperinflation. Whereas poor people who were stuck with the money that was being debased were impoverished. And that story has played out over and over and over again in the ensuing 2,500 years. And this time is really no different. We're making the same mistakes that the Romans made, or that the French made after the French Revolution, or that the Germans made in the 1920s. And it's always ended the same way. So there's no reason to think that this won't end the same way. in one of two ways, really, with a gigantic debt-driven depression where everybody defaults and the system just implodes, or with some kind of borderline hyperinflation when prices go up to the point that nobody wants the currency anymore and the currency collapses, and then we start over with sound money of some sort, but with an impoverished population where the, you know, the bottom 80% of the public has lost their savings and are embittered by that. And so you've got a cultural crisis. At the same time, you have a financial crisis. That's going to happen, or some variation of that is going to happen.
So get your free lunch.
Question, when? Get your and how we protect ourselves. Yeah. Remember, gold worked every single time in every single previous hyperinflation. So there's no reason to think it won't work again.
Yeah. So get your free lunch while you can, because, hey, you know what? What Janis Joplin said, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, right? Right.
I mean, I think the financial variation of that is somewhat different, though, because freedom means you don't owe anybody any money and you've got cash in the bank.
Yes.
And you get that way by living small, paying off your debts, and taking your positive cash flow and putting it into real stuff that governments can't inflate away. That's doable for most people.
Yeah.
We should all be trying to get there.
It just requires a little bit different means of thinking, a different way of thinking, and understanding the limitations of man and his foibles and what exactly he can really accomplish in controlling the future, because that's what we're talking about. How do you control the future? And the answer is government cannot control the future.
Yeah. Well, government can control aspects of the future, but not the whole thing. So in that sense, the public sector has a choice of future crises.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gets to decide how it's going to go based on which safety valves it plugs up in the pressure cooker. You know,
yes.
If we protect the banks and say, no matter what risks you take, if you're JP Morgan Chase, we're going to bail you out, then a bank debt driven crisis isn't going to happen. But if you have to create huge amounts of new currency in order to prop up the banks, then the currency markets are where the pressure has to be released. Via a currency crisis, via falling currency values.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the decision we've made, although it's not completely guaranteed. You know, the Fed is raising interest rates right now. So we might be, if they continue to do this, if they jack interest rates up to, say, either 3-ish% right now, almost across the board in the U.S., let's say they go to 6%, historically normal, that blows up the system and gives us a debt-driven depression.
Very true.
So we could do that. We could still choose that option, but it's very unlikely because the Fed has reflexively gone easy. In other words, they've liquefied crises since the 1990s by cutting interest rates and providing loan guarantees and changing reserve requirements for banks. They do things to make money easier and make debt more attractive. And there's no reason to think they won't do that again. So when the banks blow up, or when something else blows up, the emerging markets, which owe money to our banks, or the corporations that borrowed huge amounts of money to buy back their stocks, or student loans, you know, the list of things that could blow up is long and tending towards infinite right now.
Yes.
But when one of those things blows up, the Fed will shift gears away from raising interest rates and towards cutting interest rates and towards bailing people out. So we'll be back in 2010 again, but with vastly bigger numbers. We pay pretty much double the debt everywhere you look. So then the question becomes, is there any amount of currency you can create that puts us back into quote unquote normal territory? And I think the answer this time will be no.
Yeah.
But I thought the answer last time would have been no.
You know,
the numbers
was.
We had hit in 2008, 2009 seemed untenable, seemed unmanageable. Now they've doubled. So they still seem unmanageable. So we'll find out. But we have to have the crisis before the Fed shifts gears. In other words, stocks have to drop And the question is, how far do they have to drop before the Fed goes back to cutting interest rates? And my guess is somewhere around 20%. When people start thinking we're having an actual bear market, then you'll see the Fed shift gears.
Yeah, I think you were right, John, as always. But the process, you have to understand, isn't fixed in time. It's going to happen. There'll be an event. There'll be something that just sets the system reeling. And at that point, we find out the real abilities of the Federal Reserve, or their lack of ability to control the future, right?
Yeah. At some point, it's going to dawn on people that the guys they thought were the smartest people in the world, who had everything under control and were at our backs, those guys really don't know what they're doing, and they really can't control things. And then you'll see a mass panic. Then you'll see market psychology shift from the euphoria of the week before last to utter and complete panic, where everybody's heading for the exits. You know, if your Google stock is down by 40%, but it's still up by 100% from where you bought it, you're going to try to get out at whatever price you need to take. And the exits are going to turn out to be very small in that case, because it's hard to get out when an over-leveraged society all wants to get through that one exit at the same time. So we'll see a selling panic, just like we did in 2008, 2009, only probably much bigger, because stocks are much higher now. Bonds, before their recent uptick, were much, much more richly priced. And the amount of debt in the world is vastly greater, which means the derivatives on that debt are much more dangerous than they were back then. And we don't know where those derivatives are. That's the thing that almost blew up the system last time, was that that we had mortgage-related derivatives out there. This time we've got interest rate and currency derivatives that dominate the derivatives market. So let interest rates get very volatile, or just spike.
Yeah.
Or plunge. Either way, you know, it doesn't matter what they do. As long as they go dramatically and quickly in one direction, then you've got everybody on the wrong side of that bet blowing up on you out there.
Yeah.
And that could happen very easily.
Yeah. Well, like you say, we don't know where they are. And they can be in the most unlikely of places, like pension plans. They could be at your local bank at the because the big banks might have dumped all of their really risky stuff onto the smaller banks, and the smaller banks won't even know it, or they'll think that they're hedged. But then if there's a counterparty failure, like a Lehman type event, we're all kind of screwed, aren't we?
Well, Yeah. When Goldman Sachs goes to a pension fund, let's say, they've got a pretty much canned pitch where they say, okay, this structured financial product will earn you 100 basis points above treasuries, but it's completely hedged, so your loss is minimized. Mm-hmm. So on a risk return basis, it's a better deal than what you've got now, and it might allow you to hit that 8% bogey that the people running this hedge fund or this this pension fund have imposed on you. Mm-hmm. And so the pension manager says, well, okay, if it's hedged, I guess I'll give it a try. But it turns out it's not really hedged, because the hedge is a counterparty. You know, it's some other hedge fund or some other bank that has to pay off on their side of the bet. And if they blow up, it's not hedged anymore. So already pension funds, for instance, are one of the real potential implosions this time around. One of the catalysts that could blow up the system, because they're underfunded, and they're getting more underfunded. And when stocks start to drop, their underfunding will explode. Well, if they've got derivatives that are going to behave even worse than the equities that they own when this thing blows up, then, you know, we're going to see, for instance, Chicago's pension fund have to declare some version of bankruptcy and then be bailed out by the state government, which will then be bankrupt functionally, or by the federal government, which will put all that on taxpayer. You know, it will only end when people see that the currency that everybody's using to play these games is no longer viable. So that's the dollar collapse thesis. And, you know, it's taken an awful long time to happen, but it's becoming more and more likely every day at some point in the future.
Yeah. And as the boomers retire, as all these things are taking place that really none of you are prepared for, it gets more and more hazardous to your wealth by the day. And the problem, John, is there's no signs up there. It's not like, a seismograph. And if you have an earthquake, it tells you, you're having an earthquake. Here, the seismograph is, it's already too late. So I think you need to be watching people who are already heading for the exits or are poised to head for the exit and emulate them. It might be the smart money. You might miss another 25% increase in the stock market. My personal opinion is probably this is going to go on for another year or two at least, far longer than you and I ever thought possible. I mean, can you believe, John, that it's 10 years since the crash? And what have we learned, right? We have learned nothing from the crash.
Well, we've learned that easy money gets you out of everything. Yeah. That's what they think they've learned, at least. Yes. And the government is acting accordingly. But, Jim Rickards, speaking of the timing here, has a story he likes to tell about his clients where he's telling people to start selling equities and start buying gold, right? Yeah. And they say, well, tell me right before it's going to crash and then I'll sell my stocks and buy gold. And he says, no, that's not how it works. By the time I know it's going to crash, you won't be able to do either of those things. Nobody will buy your stocks and there will be no gold for you to buy. So you need to position yourself ahead of time. You need to be ready for it. And then, if you have to wait a few years, that's the price you pay for being truly hedged, not hedged like the pension funds we were talking about, but actually hedged against a market catastrophe, because one is coming.
Yeah, it's going to come at some point, probably a while longer, my guess, but it's definitely coming. Anyway, go find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Sorry for the lack of video here. The sound punked out on the video, so we're going to have to manually edit it in, and that's a little bit beyond my capabilities, but I'll give it a shot. And if we can get the video up, it'll go up. Anyway, dollarcollapse.com, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Send us your emails, kl@KerryLutz. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network, Twitter feed @KerryLutz. John, we'll catch you next week. And hopefully the video is working great. Okay. Problem is there's no sound. So if you're a good lip reader, you lip readers out there, I'll give you a link and you can just watch along, right? All right, John, we'll catch you next Monday.
Okay, Gary, see ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.